for the show. Bringing you Bigfoot News, yo-yo. Oh, yeah. Watching in the woods, catching all the food. Oh, yeah. Digging deep to bring you all the news. From sightings to footprints, it's all in the light. Stay tuned to Squatch Geek, it's out of sight. And good evening, cyberspace. Welcome to the Bigfoot News for today's date, February 2nd, 2024. As always, I'm your host, the Squatch Detective Steve Coles, along with my counterpart in this crime against Bigfootery, Chris Bennett. What's going on, my brother?
Oh, same old man. We're enjoying some nice weather. Nice weather. And today was Groundhog Day, too. So I kind of watched Punxsutawney Phil on that live version, but, you know.
Who did not see his shadow.
Yeah, he didn't see his shadow, but, you know, if he was living around here, he would, because, you know, we had a bright, sunny day here. But, we'll hope and pray that he's right, you know. Hope and pray that he's right, because I'm tired of winter weather.
Yes, it's going, and... I'm watching the chat here, and it's getting funny. You know? But welcome one and all. Thanks for showing up here on Friday night for the Bigfoot News. And boy, we got as usual, we got four stories tonight, or four things we want to cover. And sometimes what's old is new again because it picks up in the media.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's because some people decide through their own machination to spin up a story again. But here we are, and we got quite a bunch of fun announcements tonight, really great announcements about the channel and what's going on in the next few weeks. We actually announcing three shows this tonight throughout the course. Of course, you want to stay tuned to the end because we have a blockbuster coming just in a couple of weeks, because we are going to do a show on Super Bowl Sunday. So all you Swifties, I'm sorry you'll miss out on the show, but you can always catch it on replay. And boy, we got a humdinger for that show. And we're gonna record the Super Bowl. Yeah, record the Super Bowl. And for those in the know, our members, don't spill the beans just yet. We want people to stay till the end of the Bigfoot News. So, but anyway, if you're new around here. As my buddy Dame Drop says, if you're new around here, stay true around here, hit that thumbs up button, subscribe if you haven't subscribed, because we bring you all kinds of content throughout the week. We bring you the news on Friday nights. We bring you the live show on Sunday nights where we do interviews, and, we do midweek drops of long form videos, analyzing some of the Bigfoot evidence that's out there. And of course, lately, what we've been doing for our short runs, which usually are at the end of the week, usually on Thursday, we've been doing what I call Monkey Mania, which is just kind of a funny way to show you how smart primates can be in a very funny and fun way. So stay tuned for all that. That seems to be the jive that's making this channel work quite a bit. So, and for anybody that, like I said, your new subscriber, welcome. We welcome folks with open arms. And ask questions, pop in the chat, say hello, make yourself known. We love to hear from you. Yeah, push that like button. Comment. It's very important you give us a comment. Comments are actually more important than likes. You know, ask questions. You know, tell us what you think. We're all really gassed to hear your opinion. So anyway, let's do our roll call for the night. We do this on the live show. We do this on the new show as well.
All right.
Yeah. So first in tonight is Jeff, Mr. 2505 Federal. Hello, sir. Who says, betting no Mike, mic'd up Bigfoot again this week, telling his side of things. No, unfortunately, none of them will take my invite to come in studio and sit and talk. Next up is Walter Kroll. Hello, Walter, one of our members. Good to see you, sir. Lester Taylor, another one of our regular followers. Good to see you, Lester. Don Gummow Jr. Don, I got your audios. I'm going to be diving into them probably Sunday morning. Ooh. Get a good listen. Yeah, Don's got a lot of audio, very interesting stuff. Grasshopper et al. Is in the house. Grass, good to see you, man. Angel Nolan. Hello, Angel.
Angel?
Mitch Hargrove, good to see you. Good to see you, Mitch.
Mitch.
Brian and Chewy go hiking. Hello, Brian. Hope Chewy's feeling better from that fall.
Yeah.
Nikki's here from Sasquatch Secrets. Hello, Nikki. Another one of our longtime members. Low Rider is in the house.
Thank Arthur, you, good to see
Arthur
you.
Watch, good to see you.
Arthur.
One of our newer listeners who's probably been there and now he's just finally getting in there. But Jeff D. Smith is in the house. Hello, Jeff. Welcome. And of course, Little Kilroy was in a ghillie suit. Hello, Little Kilroy. Good to see you, sir. And of course, hey, here we go. Here's another new listener, Timberline Camp.
Timberline Camp, welcome.
Well, we got him up here. Well, good deal. I'd love to come up and see you. I can get across the border because I have an enhanced driver's license. So, yeah, it's awesome. I'd love to get out there and check those Canadian squatches. But my question is, do Canadian squatches say A at the end of their vocalizations? Or A?
A?
Just a little fun there. Got to have a little fun. Anyway, so here we are, 9:06, and boy, we got a lot on the plate tonight. So the first up is who is going to be on Squatch D TV this week. And here we are. This Sunday night, we're going to have
one
of the first long-term co-host was Billy Willard, was on from, I think, 2006 or 2007 through 2008. So about 3 years he was sitting in the seat. And now he took some time off from Bigfoot research a number of years. Now he's back in charge of Sasquatch Watch of Virginia, and he's got a lot to say, and we're going to be talking to him Sunday night. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Can't wait.
And hello. Oh, Mick just snuck in too.
Oh, I'm Mick.
You know, he's probably Bella, and DM Zabo is also popping in as well.
Welcome. Good to see you guys. Glad. So, better late than never.
So our first story comes way of Irish Star, which has been a really great source of information for us.
Yeah.
And we're talking right now. The conversation is going to go, pardon the expression, the conversation is going to go real shitty here in a minute because we're talking about Bigfoot, alleged Bigfoot turds found by a woman who thinks she may have found Sasquatch evidence.
Yeah. Bigfoot turds found by a woman who thinks she may have found Sasquatch evidence. The Bigfoot turds were wider than Coke cans, according to the woman.
Well, that's a talk that puts a whole new spin about have a Coke and a smile.
Right. You got the photos up. Yeah, okay. Sorry, I'm looking at another page, y'all, so bear with me. A woman thinks she may have found evidence of Sasquatch after uploading these photos, the ones you're looking at, of Bigfoot turds, in quotation marks, which were wider than Coke cans. Christy Morton shared her photos of the turds on the Pacific Northwest Bigfoot Photos, Videos, and Sightings Facebook group. So another Facebook group, which is a popular Sasquatch enthusiast community. Recently, a man who experienced weird smells and sounds uploaded these pictures, supposedly of Bigfoot, of the same Facebook group. Oh, that's that guy that, yeah, had that one in the background he didn't know was there till like years later. Oh, anyway. A couple of days ago, I was exploring around a lava bed area just outside of Willard, Washington, slightly north of the Columbia River Gorge, west of Mount Adams. Very cool area with lots of caves, some old growth, and pretty isolated, Christy said. Anyway, I came across a pretty massive poo in the pics. It looks almost like a stone, but it was soft. No fur or bones or berries obvious in it. There were about 5 piles close together, but that main one was bigger, wider than a Coke can. There were lots of elk droppings, but they looked much different. What do you think? Bear or question mark? Christy's photos show 2 stools. One was bigger than her hand, while the other was slightly smaller. Some people in the comment section were convinced that the social media user may have stumbled upon evidence of the existence of Sasquatch. That had to hurt. LOL, definitely Bigfoot, one person wrote. Another person said, never rule out Bigfoot. You could send a sample and have it DNA tested. Another Sasquatch enthusiast wrote, I'm from that area and know that area very well. It's known for Bigfoot sightings. Could have been a skunk ape, a local wrote. Another person said Bigfoot following the elk. Another more skeptical person ruled out the possibility of the droppings belonging to a bear, but offered an alternative theory. Cow elk leave pellets, bulls leave clumps all mushed together. So it looks to be bull elk scat, they said. And another person concurred, saying elk without question. Thank you, everyone, for the responses. Feel like I've had learned a thing or two, and most likely this was a big bear or bull elk. But who knows for sure? Definitely a squatchy area, Christy wrote after reading through the comments.
Well, here's the interesting thing. The ones up on top I've seen before.
Yeah.
And basically, what I think is a couple of animals made those. I see a bear poop in there, the big log one. Yes, it could be one of those oddball deer poops as well that tend to be very fat. But, you know, there you have some bear scat. And the other one is obviously either a cow or a bison, which make similar poops, are actually there. You know, so it looks to me, and looking at the picture, that because I know, because there was tons of cattle poop around when I was out in the desert for the penned up animal,
right?
And we used to burn them in the fire. They used to dry out in the sun, and they made excellent kindling,
right? But so the thing is, what I looked at, I was thinking, okay, that's a cow pie, but you know where it's supposed to have been found at. Supposedly, now we all we have is her word where she took this photo. You know, wouldn't be there's no cattle farms nearby, I wouldn't think, out in the wilderness.
Yep.
But
there could be bison.
In Washington, I don't know, Steve.
I don't know either. I don't know. I don't know.
I would say, you know, closer to a cow or excuse me, the bison does do that. Buffalo poop looks like that.
Yeah.
You know, something that eats grass and for a living. Yeah, I would think.
And again, you know, we released that video of the about the audio we caught last September in the Adirondacks. And again, you know, is it evidence? No, it's not evidence because we didn't see what made the poop.
Right.
Just like the audio, we didn't see what made the audio. So really, at best, it's going to be investigative intelligence, but I do not believe that's even this. In this particular case, I believe there's more logical explanations for that. And the other interesting thing is it's gray. Yeah. I don't know. You know, maybe the color's off, but I've never seen a gray poop.
I think the chat really likes this one. There's a lot of comments over there, mostly from me.
Yeah, I mean, could it be moose? Could be. Jeremiah said you had me at turds.
Oh, they're killing me. You guys are killing me. I'm trying to keep a straight face here, but I'm reading through the chats and it's killing me. Bigfoot passed some of mixed special family meatloaf.
That's what the meatloaf looks like. There it is. That's what the meatloaf looks like after post-incident.
Oh, lowrider killing me. Mick too. Oh, God. You guys.
And yes, it does look really dried out and old, Nikki. I agree. Not a fresh turd, that's for sure. Could it be a turd from the herd? Who knows?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. The location would tell us a lot if we knew, you know, what location where that was
picture came from. And but, like I said, I looked at elk scat. Somebody was suggesting maybe elk, but elk usually have egg-shaped pellets, and they look a lot like deer pellets almost.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of, but every once in a while, like a deer will lay out one of those long Coke can type of logs if they get into a particular diet. So could it be an elk or another deer laying that one out? Possible. I don't know what made that round one, necessarily those three round ones, but they look very similar to cow pies to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Plop, plop, plop.
And nice hair clip, by the way, on their finger. One would think you'd want, you know, you're looking at the poop, you want to keep your hair up, not take the hair clip out and put it on your finger. But hey, that's just me.
Well, maybe that's how, because she said it was soft. So maybe that's how she checked the texture with her hair clip.
Question. No DM Zabo. I've never been to Bluff Creek, California.
I've I've never felt the need to test the texture of scat, but you know, if I do, I'll bring a hair clip along.
Yeah, you give it the taste test. Oh, it's nutty. Anyway.
Oh, all right. Next up, what we
next up. Next up is an article that Chris found about a skeptical article about the Bigfoot mystery, written by Bruce Hardy. And you know, Chris, you want to read that one out?
Okay.
This one's gonna have take a little time. So here we go.
Y'all hang on. Yeah, Mr. Bruce Hardy, you know, he tells us a little bit about himself right out of the gate here. So what Bigfoot teaches us about public mistrust of science. In the 1960s, credentialed scientists, including physical anthropologists, hunted for the legendary Sasquatch. How did they fall for the hoax? Okay, here we go. In the late 1960s, Bigfoot seemed to be a traipsing all over the Pacific Northwest. Reports of footprints from an 8-foot-tall bipedal primate came in from Washington to Northern California. Chasing these footprints and the creatures who made them were a group of amateur naturalists, journalists, and a few credentialed physical anthropologists. Science historian Brian Regal has called this group the Monster Hunters. Well, we called them the Four Horsemen. Anyway, in 1969, the Monster Hunters descended on the town in northern Washington in Bigfoot circles. This would become known as the Bossberg incident. The rivalry among the Monster Hunters was intense. Everyone wanted to be first to find or even capture a Bigfoot. But they also didn't want to fall for a hoax. When the dust finally settled on the small town of Bossberg, we would see the pitfalls of combining science, ego, and arrogance, and how this cocktail promotes pseudoscience and public mistrust of science. The origins of Bigfoot pseudoscience. After some early accounts and sightings, the 20th century Bigfoot frenzy erupted when a set of footprints were found on a construction site managed by Ray Wallace near Bluff Creek, California, in 1958. The prints looked human, but were larger and suggested a stride length between 4 and 10 feet. The creature was purported to be between 8 and 10 feet tall, with footprints that could be 18 inches long and 8 inches wide. For reference, my foot that fits a U.S. size 12 shoe measures 9.5 inches long and 4 inches wide. Your shoes are too big, buddy. Anyway, over the course of several weeks, more footprints surfaced near Bluff Creek. The construction crew attributed them to a creature they called Bigfoot. Once the media picked up the story, the search was on for North America's abominable snowman. Abominable.
Abominable.
Yeah, that's a tough word for me. In 1967, two monster hunters, Roger Patterson and Bob Giblin, set out on horseback to film Bigfoot. They were once again near Bluff Creek. On October 20th, they recorded about a minute of grainy, blurry footage. To this day, the Patterson-Giblin film is considered by many to be the best evidence of Bigfoot's existence. Also known as Sasquatch, Bigfoot sightings have occurred in every U.S. state except Hawaii and around the world. Other clandestine bipeds supposedly roam. Among others, the Yeti climbs the Himalayas, the Almas prowls Russia, and the Yowie lurks in Australia. According to some, our planet is overrun with towering primates. Well, I want to take a second here and just comment about that, Steve. Now, I know where he's going with this. But see, what he's not mentioning here is that all these cultures were not connected. And each culture, although physically separated by thousands of miles, had their own legend of a hairy man-beast. You know what I mean? Well, anyway. Bigfoot hunters in Bossberg. When tracks were found in northern Washington a few years after the Patterson-Gimlin film, everyone came running. A veritable circus of monster hunters and media arrived at the small town of Bossberg. But I will just focus on three: Rene DeHinden, Grover Krantz, and Ivan Marks. The irascible, irascible Swiss Canadian Dehenden. That's a word I'm not used to pronouncing either. Was an amateur naturalist who had a reputation in the Bigfoot community as a serious investigator who was suspicious of most people involved in Bigfoot research. A physical anthropologist at Washington State University, Krantz saw himself as bringing real scientific training and acumen to the search for this anomalous primate. Marx, a trapper, trapper and cougar breeder, I didn't
know that. Among other things.
Yeah. I didn't know that about the cougars. Anyway, had been involved in Bigfoot investigations since the early 1960s. In November 1969, following up on local rumors, Marx located footprints near the dump and alerted fellow monster hunters that he had found Bigfoot. Dehenden joined Marx a few weeks later, and the two went searching for more tracks. On December 13th, they checked an area where they had left meat out as bait. Marx got out of the car, but returned almost immediately, having found footprints in the snow. This trackway comprised 1,089 prints. When Krantz finally arrived, most of the tracks had melted or been trampled on, but a few were preserved under cardboard and newspaper. These would convince Krantz that Bigfoot was real. Evidence or hoax? The left foot, like most alleged Bigfoot prints, was about 17 inches long and 7 inches wide. The right foot, however, has curved toes and bulges on the side. As a physical anthropologist trained in anatomy, Krantz believed that the right print's abnormality was due to a traumatic injury, which led to a deformity in the foot and a severe limp. He said, if someone faked these footprints with all the subtle hints of anatomy design, he had to be a real genius, an expert at anatomy, very inventive and original thinker. He had to outclass me in those areas, and I don't think anyone outclasses me in those areas, at least not since Leonardo da Vinci. Grover thought a lot of himself. So I'd say if such a person is impossible, therefore the tracks are real. These became known as the Cripplefoot tracks. And I think we've all seen them.
The Bossberg Cripplefoot.
Yeah. Unlike Krantz, Dehenden had seen the entire trackway. It started at a river, crossed a railway, road, and fence several times, and ended back at the same river. It was an odd path. Marx also conveniently found Bigfoot evidence at will. Dehenden said of Marx, it seemed that every time he called, Marx had found something. A handprint here, a footprint there, always something to keep the trail warm. A few weeks later, Marx claimed to have filmed the creature. When others viewed the video, some thought it was obviously faked. Evidence surfaced that Marx had recently bought scraps of fur in a neighboring town. Dehenden strongly suspected that Marx also hoaxed the Cripplefoot tracks, but Krantz refused to accept that they were not real. Slim chances for big biped. What are the chances an 8-foot-tall bipedal primate lives in North America? From an ecological perspective, slim, large-bodied animals eat a lot, and then produce mounds of poop. Surely hikers and naturalists would have encountered Bigfoot droppings then, right? Not to my knowledge. Moreover, no one has ever found bones, roadkill, or other remains from a dead Bigfoot. What does this episode tell us about public mistrust of science? Science purports to be a systematic way of gaining reliable knowledge about the world around us. Science's authority comes from the fact that it relies on evidence, which can be checked by others to ensure reliability. Done properly, science is self-correcting. However, the scientific process can break down if individual scientists see themselves rather than the evidence as the source of authority. Then the evidence becomes secondary or worse, unimportant. Ooh. Almost got it.
Almost there.
In Cripplefoot's case, Krantz's estimation of his own intelligence, at least on par with that of Da Vinci, blinded him to the evidence that was before him. He believed that his knowledge was so specialized and detailed, that it was beyond the capacity of others to understand. He was more like a medieval priest than a scientist. Now, I liked Kranz. I hate to hear this, but that's okay. And Hendon himself, not a credentialed expert, was better able to recognize the evidence for what it was, a hoax. The amateur de Hendon acted more scientifically than the PhD-holding scientist, Kranz. Hubris and public mistrust. The Bossberg incident serves as a warning against hubris among scientists. When scientists becomes more important than the subject being studied or the evidence being gathered, they are no longer practicing science or producing reliable and useful knowledge. And scientific or academic hubris is not limited to claiming genius-level intelligence. It can also manifest in opaque language. In later years, Kranz would say that he had two secret tests that he could determine whether a footprint was real. He never revealed them. Ultimately, not even the other monster hunters trusted him.
Well, let me turn some of the stuff he's saying around.
I'm going to get a drink.
Yeah. First of all, the public mistrust of science is not because a scientist may feel particularly strong on one piece of evidence. Right. Not at all. Where they distrust science is exactly right. When their own hubris takes over and says Bigfoot does not exist because there's zero evidence and eliminates all the track evidence. Right. There's zero evidence and they eliminate all the sightings. See, this is gaslighting. Right. He's using our own arguments against us in this particular instance. And he's not looking at it from our perspective saying, hey, you know what? You're right that most scientists, and I can name dozens that said, oh, there's not enough food in the forest. There is not enough food in the forest
what was her name?
Well, hold on. The anthropologist that said, Philip Stevens, who said there's no evidence that supports that North America can support a large primate when Homo sapiens have been living here for thousands of years, right?
Yeah.
Like the ecologist from New York State NCON, who said on my show, and I forget his name, who said, oh, if these things were real, people would be seeing them. You shithead, they are seeing them. You see, that's their own hubris. And that's why people don't trust science, because they make opinion sound like fact. And all they are in certain instances are talking heads. Now, going back to Kranz, could he have gotten it wrong? Could he have gotten the Bossberg cripple foot wrong? Sure. And in actuality, I believe he did.
I think so too.
Now, I noticed this, unlike Kranz, the Hinden had seen the entire trackway. It started a river, crossed the railway, blah, 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 blah. Now, if you go to Sasquatch Bigfoot, written by Rene de Hendon and Don Hunter. I think it's page 256 or 254. You know, it's in the 250s. De Hendon explains the day Marx found the tracks. And Marx pulls up on the side of the road to this area. He says, let me just check this area real quick. I'll be right back. He gets out and he comes back and he found all the trackway. That's how that happened. Simple as that. Now, do I believe Marx faked them? Absolutely. Because this was what, the late 60s, right? Early 70s. And then shortly thereafter, Marx puts out the limping Bigfoot, which obviously, right? So all this was, I think, was a segue into, I'm going to put these tracks here with a cripple foot. Right. I've already got the picture. He probably at that time already had that film in the can of the limping Bigfoot.
Sure he did.
And the thing is Kranz could not be outdone by Roger Patterson. And that's what spurned him to do that. Right.
He already had the backing of Grover Kranz before he released it.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
But at that time, nobody knew that Marx was a hoaxer. At that time,
until 71, when the film Wall came to bed and Peter Byrne exposed Marx. Yes.
Well, I think De Hendon, by studying the trackway, knew but wasn't saying, you know, I don't think DeHinden trusted Marks whatsoever.
I think he did for a while until that video came out, because right. why would he be in the car with him?
Right.
Right. And I think once the video came out, then DeHinden got very highly skeptical of the whole thing.
Right.
Whereas Grover Krantz did not, because let's face it, there was an anthropologist in Vermont, not Dr. Warren Cook, that was taken in by Marks and said, God, he's such a nice guy. I don't see him doing this kind of thing. That's the con and con man. Con stands for confidence. And I really think in this particular instance that this was just a series of events.
Right.
Now one could say, hey, the cripple foot, what came first, the cripple foot or the video or the movie of the cripple foot, what came first? Who knows? We don't know at this point. We never will. But it's my contention that probably the film was made, put in the can, and now Marks was waiting for that opportunity to get these guys on board via the Cripplefoot tracks.
Exactly. Yeah. That makes more sense to me. But, you know, in Grover Krantz's defense, because I really liked Grover Krantz, okay, we're talking somebody, he's a PhD in the 60s, physical anthropologist, and the dude knew his stuff on footprints. But I think he went on to it a little bit deeper, so deep that he kind of fooled himself.
Right. Now, Mick says, I have to disagree with you, Stephen, Chris, Grant, some of them agree that Marks would have been more well-versed. That's possible. But let's say the Cripplefoot tracks are legitimate. Okay. Who found them? Ivan Marks. Right. For many, many years in the Bigfoot field, Rene DeHinden was given the credit for it. And then, you know, eventually Rene was like, no, it was Ivan Marks who found them, because he didn't believe Ivan Marks, who was there, did not believe they were real. And he was the only one, aside from Marks, to see the actual trackway. So understand, we have a first person witness that we can trust, Rene DeHinden, to say, hey, these things weren't real. Yeah. Right. So that's my take on it. And the other thing too is, let's look at it this way. If Rick Dyer came out today and showed everybody a Bigfoot video, it could be real, couldn't it?
It could happen.
But the problem is, Marks tainted himself, which means it taints anything he ever brought forward going back. And that brings us to current events. The whole scandal at the WWE with the stepping down of Vince McMahon and the allegations of sex trafficking and stuff like that. Anything he did in the background now is just tainted by that. And the same goes with Ivan Marks. Because of the video he tried to sell to, I think, Green or Peter Byrne, rather, he tried to sell to Peter Byrne, because it's such a obvious fake in a person in a costume. What does it do with the rest of the evidence he found? What does it do with the rest of the stories he's told? It throws them in the garbage. So unfortunately, scientists can be blind to that, but investigators are not. So
in his day,
it doesn't matter if they're legitimate or not. It's a moot point, because they were found by Marks. And that's where I stand on that, is that I believe they were fake, because given the track record of Marks, but even if they're not, because certainly I'm no anthropologist or foot anatomist like Dr. Meldrum. And we'll have more on that, I'm sure, in a while. But
We had actually looked at the footprint that was cast, that was the cripple foot track. And those were cast in the snow. And we got a look at that, and I don't know, Steve had the photo, but he may have lost it on the when his backup hard drive died, as they do. But we looked at that photo in great detail, and I'll tell you what, it didn't look like a in my opinion, looked like a boot track that had been messed with,
right. you know, it is, you know, it is what it is. You can't, that's the bottom line. Unfortunately, right. as an investigator, I would be suspect of it, not based on any physical attribute, but based on the history of it. Mm-hmm. So as an investigator, no, you have to, I know you're not prone to painting with such a wide brush, but you have to, because you know, what's going to end up happening is, for example, let me give you a good point. This article, this guy had plenty of opportunity to talk about Jerry Crew and the fact that Ray Wallace had some involvement in, let's not forget, the Stompers, even though they look like nothing like the Tracks. He avoided that conversation. How about the Bob Hieronymus claims and the Philip Morris claims with the Patterson-Gimlin film? He ignored that argument. It's too muddled in both of those cases, and the evidence doesn't really point to that being there. But when you come to this Marx thing, you cannot escape it. That Marx was a hoaxer, we know that. He was the protege, or rather, he was the mentor of Tom Biscardi.
Right.
Let's not forget that, too. Right.
That might be new information for some of our listeners.
Right. But he was the mentor of Tom Biscardi.
Right.
He was the one Tom Biscardi went to first. Right. So let's, I would say you have to be suspicious. You cannot use
that. Think about that.
Right. It would get, if you brought that kind of evidence to court, it would get thrown out because of the guy's history. It just would not. Sorry, we can't use that evidence. This guy is too tainted. And that would be that. And the same goes with science. So as an investigator, I'd say, you know, it's interesting. We can look at it as maybe intelligence. Oh, well, that's interesting. But unfortunately, it's not evidence because of the guy's history. The same. So it is what it is. That's the story behind the Cripplefoot. We know, yeah. Ivan, and there's Ivan. You know, if you look at the little picture up there, there's Ivan Marx displaying the Cripplefoot very proudly.
And Grover, although he's gone now, he donated his bones and I think the bones of his favorite dog to, I think they're found in the, are they in the Smithsonian, Steve?
Yes. I can't remember. He originally donated his body to the body farm in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And that, to show that, and then his bones went to the Smithsonian afterwards. When I die, I'm donating my body to science fiction. But, and I agree. Philip Morris and Hieronymus had nothing to do with the Patterson-Gimlin film. I think they're all, you know, talking heads. The same thing with the Stompers. I think that there was a connection made 1 + 1. I do believe the what was it, the Blue Creek or the Blue Ridge trackway that John Green looked at looked awfully a lot like the Stompers, I must say.
Yeah.
So that's
those were the Ray Wallace had some Stompers when
let's face it, nobody is above being fooled. Mm-hmm. You know, so let's look at it that way. Nobody's above being fooled. That's myself, right. Chris, Dr. Kranz, Dr. Meldrum, Dr. Cook from Vermont, Dr. Warren Cook. So nobody is beyond being fooled. So we're only human, so take it at that. But let's put this in historical perspective. Unfortunately, the tracks were found by a guy later deemed a hoaxer. So there's no way around that. But I think the gist of the article is the guy makes some valid points, but he puts him in a biased spin that the reason why people don't trust science is because of what? Because we had a scientist to believe in the Cripplefoot tracks.
Right. Yeah.
Horseshit. I call horseshit on that one. No lie. Because what I feel is people don't trust science because of the scientists like Philip Stevens and like that guy from NCON making just flippant statements with no scientific backing and sometimes even inaccurate, like Philip Stevens did about the, you know, large primates not being supported in North America.
Well, I'm going to have to go back and look it up, but there was one documentary on Bigfoot that was done in the Pacific Northwest, and they had a PhD, and I can't remember what her name was, but she said, "Oh well, there's just not enough food here to support a creature that size," and we're in the Pacific Northwest with grizzly bears. You know, yeah, I mean, nobody there thought to ask her, well, excuse me, ma'am, but what about grizzly bears?
Or even black bears, because black bears need 15,000 calories a day before they go into hibernation. Yeah. That's in New York, too. So
there's not enough food.
And we're, well,
there's not enough food to support a Bigfoot, but you know, we got all kinds of grizzlies roaming around here.
And we're going to be talking about bears in a minute, but let's get to this next story here. So it turns out that MK Davis and Todd Gatewood are going to be on Sasquatch Odyssey. I think the actual interview is in the can by now. We learned from our guest last week, C. Wayne Tuthero, that this was going to go happen because he does co-host the show.
Yeah.
And he's very skeptical of these two guys, very skeptical. He was like, don't even get me started on the massacre stuff. But it seems like Gatewood and Davis are trying to make a push to have the Bigfoot Massacre revival tour. And again, you know, Jeff Kelly, who is a fan of this show, is out there, runs the Squatchers Lounge over in Facebook, said, you know, the right side is newly claimed blow up, you know, of Patty. The left side is an artist rendition that has been at every event for the last 8 years. Why did Todd Gatewood use the left image as a base rather than the actual copy digital frame, which is readily available? It's true. Gatewood's new assessments that claim to use, you know, these AI software to enhance, you know, no matter how you look at it, it's just an artist's rendition. It's not evidence. You're not even using, the original film to generate that picture. You're using an artist rendition that's been touched up by an artist, and then you're using that to draw evidence. So that puts it way out in left field to start with. But even let's say he took the original and used, he took the original Patterson film and used that and drove that through AI. That's still an artist's rendition. It's just a computer generating that.
Right.
So it doesn't matter. But just to show you, look, if you look at what kind of person Gatewood is, he calls them the Sasquatch people. And there's, you know, in one particular comment he made on Facebook, I remember him saying, oh, look at the film here. You can still see the red lines where the blood was running down Patty's leg. And hey, don't come at me with this because I'm not going to entertain it, basically. So basically, what I say is law and that's it. You can't right. argue with me. But yet he shows up on shows that are going to be friendly to him. I dare them to come on this show. I dare them to come on this show where they can get some tough questions. Because I know my audience out there has got some really, our audience has got some really tough questions out there for him.
Yeah, everybody has watched the Patterson-Gimlin film probably a zillion times, okay? Has anybody seen blood running down Patty's leg? Anybody?
No. No. And why, you know, and like I said, all blood should be black or brown. You know, and they're saying, oh, there was a red, you know. Yeah, well, again, the red spot on the ground, that's their whole evidence to base when blood dries brown or black. That's their whole basis of coming up with this grand conspiracy. And what people don't realize is that, okay, you think that's blood. Can you prove it? No. Can you prove that's blood? Well, I think, you know, well, I think because, you know, no. Can you prove it's blood? Do you have a, MK, you were allegedly at the, and Gatewood even, you were allegedly at the Bluff Creek sighting. In fact, you yell at other organizations such as, you know, the Bluff Creek Project and whatever you claim that they're misleading people to the site. Well, you were at the site. You know what? You know, did you dig and get soil samples to see if you can test them? No, I'll tell you where the soil samples went that MK got at Bluff Creek, folks. I will tell you that where they went. You know where they went? They went into little vials, and he used to go to these shows where he gave his talk, and he used to sell those vials for $5 a piece as Bluff Creek sand. That's where the soil samples went. He sold them as a souvenir to people coming to his table. Oh, that's man. Where they went.
Well, you know, never thought about doing that. That's pretty interesting.
Right. That's what he did. I mean, I saw him doing it.
Oh, man.
Or actually, I met Don Monroe, actually, that also got, I've never met MK personally, but right. I've seen Don Monroe, who was good at the time, was good friends with MK, who had a bunch of those Bluff Creeks that MK had gathered and gave to him.
Yeah.
So.
Well, didn't know that. Well, you know me. I personally don't hate on MK because you know he has done a lot of good stuff in the past. But
Rabbit Homesteading said there's a lot of actual proof that the PG stuff makes it seem fake. That this stuff makes it seem fake. And you know, watch. Again, when you have a story, here it is, and then you have the internet coming on there. There's a lot of misinformation going on. And there's a lot of misnomers going on. So.
They did a debunk there's been several different shows that did try to claim they debunked the Patterson Gimlin film. One of them, they showed Bob Hieronymus walking, and I say, oh, look, doesn't his walk look awful familiar? Awful similar to Patty?
Yeah.
Well, no. Bob was heel and toeing it.
Right.
And Patty didn't heel and toe it.
Right.
But, yeah, they still, entertainment. Okay. But, you know, the truth is, we don't know. I don't know if the Patterson Gimlin film is real or not. Things I like about it, things I don't like about it.
Right.
Weren't there.
Yep. All right. Next section and our final section. Just so you know, we will be covering the Gatewood Davis affair on the 18th of March on Squatch DTV when we have our guest, the Tall One's Own, Brent Dill. So Brent will be over there. We'll be talking this whole Gatewood Davis because, as it turns out, Brent had quite a discussion on Messenger with Gatewood.
Yeah.
You don't want to miss this one. It's pretty interesting stuff. And to get Brent's take on it, very interesting and fascinating. So that'll be the show for the 18th. That'll be, 2 weeks from today?
18th? Is that Bob Gimlin or is that Roger Patterson on horseback?
There? I have no idea. All right. So we do have a update on the Bigfoot and Bears. And
the Bears taking the census?
That's right. So Andy McGrath, the cryptozoologist and author of Beast and the Beast of the World, Hairy Humanoids, told the Daily Star that it is logical that so many sightings of Bigfoot-like creatures are spotted around the world are just misidentifications of varying species of bear. While acknowledging the possible conflation, McGrath said that bears are really quite different from the description some people made of Bigfoot. Therefore, the expert said that the physical difference between the two species is making it hard for such a misidentification to last for any more than a brief moment. So somebody sees a flash of something and said, oh, I saw Bigfoot, could be a bear. But if somebody's sitting there having a 30-second encounter with one or a 20-second encounter with one, your mind's gonna pick up, that's a bear, right? That's the way the mind works. We've talked about that numbers of times. Standing bears have sloping shoulders, whereas Bigfoot is always described as being broad shoulders. Also, bears have prominent snouts and ears on top of their heads, whereas Bigfoot are invariably described as resembling an ape with a flat face. Witnesses have all described Bigfoot walking comfortably on two legs, using their man-like hands to grasp things like sticks or rocks, a feat that no bear could perform. It is still impossible to explain the way thousands of descriptive sightings and encounters. I can't read because for some reason they put this slide thing in front of them.
It's still impossible to explain away the thousands of descriptive sightings and long encounters that people have had with these strange creatures around the world.
Right.
Steve McGrath.
Right. So Dr. Meldrum also had a Facebook post posted yesterday said that here's a preview from the Journal of Zoology, which takes on Flo Foxon's, bear study, which is the author of the study, a person named by the name of Flo, F-L-O-E, Foxon, F-O-X-O-N, who's the other similar reviews that, kind of try to debunk Loch Ness and other things.
Right.
Here's a preview from the Journal of Zoology. It provides some interesting data, but the superficial and biased scholarship outlined in the introduction casts the ultimate conclusion into considerable doubt. I'll get working on a series of commentary submissions for the RHI to offer additional perspectives on the methods and interpretation. In the meantime, once again, the correlation of bear habitat and distribution of Sasquatch reports appears to be confirmed. A useful observation in itself, but I don't think so. We've talked about that before. Why is Ohio so high in Bigfoot sightings? Their bear population is listed as under 400. right? And it's also very interesting that what we learned from the peer review, and we're going to talk about the peer review articles here in a second, the peer review articles point out that the bear data they're using is decades old. For example, Professor Julie London, University of Tennessee, made this peer review. It says the manuscript is a collection of statistical analysis and then you show that Sasquatch sightings correlate with black bear populations and humans may be mistaking black bears for Sasquatch. The author effectively introduces the topic, provides adequate background on Sasquatch, but does not provide much on black bear populations, natural history, or human bears in, you know, interactions. Right. Right. And that's huge too. It's like, well, if you have all these people seeing, you know, then if you have a certain percentage of people seeing, you know, describing a Bigfoot, which is a black bear, then how many reports do we actually have of a human bear encounter? It should be a lot more than what Sasquatch is, but there's no information on that. The author performed several statistic tests to support the following findings and blah, blah, blah. Not a, a thing. And they said like the source was from 2007 and from 2001, you know, thus this resource is outdated and suboptimal as black bear populations have changed over time. A more updated resource with more scientific methods and data collection would improve this manuscript since having accurate as possible bear population estimates is very important to the goal of the study. The author notes that this briefly in the limitations. If the human population and Sasquatch sighting data matched up with the dates of bear population estimates, it would be more valuable, just outdated. But there are no date ranges of human or Sasquatch data provided in the manuscript. So in other words, he's using sightings from the 70s and he's using like 2000s, you know, things to correlate those sightings in the 70s, right? Have bear population shifted in those particular areas. So, So in other words, if you're saying, well, you know, we can see a direct ratio, which is the crux of this. Well, you're using apples and comparing it to oranges basically now, because you're using these different time differences. So the bottom line is the discussion is short and briefly brings up important points that can invalidate the study without much discussion or argument supporting the finding of this study. That's exactly what we've done on the show too, is we're trying to invalidate it with what, you know, explain Florida, explain Mississippi, explain Alabama, explain Ohio, especially where they've all had Bigfoot sightings and they all have relatively very, very small bear populations, right. You know? So, you know, I don't, you know, the study goes on. Okay, next slide. So there was another study, another peer review done by Dr. Rahul Ravindran. And Ravindran goes in and actually lists, and Dr. Ravindran does a lot of ecological type of papers. So he's very keen on this stuff. And some of the stuff, he points out everything that's wrong on there. And, you know, provide the fundamentals of ecological niche modeling. How can such a concept be adopted in this sort of study with a strong emphasis on the results, you know, of a 2009 study would be helpful for readers. So there's a bunch of different little things in there. Lines 43 of the paragraph must be expanded and possibly include more information about black bear being misrecognized as Bigfoot sightings with references, if available, provide details. In other words, he's telling them basically, well, if you can prove it's a black bear that these people have seen, you know, that's why it says. It says it must include more information about black bears being recognized as Bigfoot sighting with references. In other words, you have no evidence showing that a black bear is, you know, a Bigfoot has been misidentified. It was actually a black bear. You have no evidence of that. So anyway, the end result in the decision is requires revisions. Major revisions are suggested. And this is a guy who writes papers on that particular niche. So very, very interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's, Some Bigfoot sightings may have been mistaken identity. Somebody may have seen a bear and thought it was Bigfoot. Sure. You know, let's give him that. But all of them? No.
Right. Yeah. No. Right. Right. And I think that was Dr. Ravenfan's point, was that, right, you know, show us some references, you know, right, if this is true, then show us show us the facts that, you know, Bigfoot has, you know, and one would say, okay, people have reported Bigfoot, and then all of a sudden there was a wild bear. It was a bear spotted in a neighborhood. Right. Yeah. There's no correlations to that at all. So makes a great point as he sips his little cup of tea.
Well, That bear study, man, it's just been front page news. When you do search a Bigfoot, it comes up, you know, bear. Bigfoot,
yeah, it's getting, well, like I said, what's old is new. It's an old study, right, and now they're bringing it back. Well, anyway, that leads us to the big Easter egg of the night.
Oh, do it.
So, what are you guys doing Super Bowl Sunday? I tell you what you're doing is Super Bowl Sunday. We're going to have on Dr. Jeff Meldrum as our guest here on Squatch D TV. So we can ask him about the bear study. We can ask him about the Bosberg Cripplefoot. We can ask him about a bunch of things. So folks, get your questions ready, get your popcorn, order filled out and have it delivered by February 11th, 9 PM Eastern, because that's when we're having Dr. Meldrum on. And he is back. He is, you know, feeling much better. And I'm glad to say he's coming on the show. So
yeah,
that's our big news for the night there. That's our big announcement for that, I should say. And, I'm looking forward. I can't wait for this show.
February the 11th. I'm stoked.
All right. Yep. So that's going to be awesome. 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 Anyway. Chris,
record the Super Bowl, watch the show.
and Don says, oh, nice, another Don on the show. Yes.
Yeah.
But he uses his middle name for it, you know. But anyway,
we're getting close to time, but getting out of here. So
yeah, that's right. So
everybody, Chris, over in chat. Thanks guys for being here with us. We appreciate you.
Chris, do your thing.
We're thrilled and humbled by your presence with us, and we're honored to have you. The show wouldn't be possible without you. We appreciate you. If it's your first time watching, man, hit the like button, thump the subscribe button, you know, share. As Steve always says, sharing is caring. And make sure, you know, tune in Sunday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern. We'll be back for the 2-hour show, and we do the Bigfoot news, of course, on Friday nights at 9 Easter. So I'm done, Steve.
And like I said, you know, using the cliche of my buddy name drops, if you're new around here, stay true around here, hit that thumbs up, leave us a comment, locking in with a thumbs up, hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell, and we have the greatest audience out there. We love you guys. We thank you guys. Thank you to all our page members. If you're not a member of the Squatch DTV membership page, you know what? I just dropped this week the entire unedited video, video that has the audio in it. And there's much more coming as well. I've confirmed with Alex, he's going to send me some of the thermal clips that he had taken just previous to that audio. So I'm looking to get my hands on those real quick too. So that'll be coming for the members, at least at first. So anyway, folks, we'll catch you here Sunday night, of course, with our guest Sunday night will be Billy Willard from Sasquatch Watcher, Virginia. Billy is back. Yes, his podcast is coming back too, and we'll be talking about that as well. But anyway, folks, on behalf of everybody here, we'll see you in a couple of days. In the meantime, stay safe. God bless. And of course, keep on squatching, folks. We'll catch you here Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on Squatch D TV. Catch you all in a bit. Good night. Ready? Here we go.